This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, live on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app, it's Gabe Ramirez.
Three, that's a magic number.
Morrell going to third, he will slide, he's got a triple.
Gabe Ramirez right here on 670 The Score, man. I'm just so happy. Get to see Mark Grody in the studio. Got Alex Kuhn producing today. Bears. One thing I'm bummed about is the Bulls. I'm going to get the part out of the way in just a little bit. But what did Ryan Poles have to say about RG3's comments? You remember where he put his big face in the middle of the screen and he said, "If I'm Caleb Williams, I'm going in and pulling Eli Manning." It made you upset. Made me upset. What did Ryan Poles think about that? We will play that for you on the other side after the trifecta. These are the top stories in my brain. Today has everything to do with Coach Eberflus.
Number three.
So, again, Eberflus talked. I did Ryan Poles yesterday. You know, Alex, you know, I did this the other day. The music, for whatever reason, is starting to annoy me. And I felt this the other day. No, all the way gone. No, you know what? Light. Yeah, you're right, light. So I had this idea for a new intro, like a new trifecta, like a different kind of way of playing it. But I have two kids, and so I don't have the time during the day to kind of chop up my intro. I'm going to do that for you guys. But in this trifecta as a whole is just my thoughts, right? And usually it's the top three stories that bubble up. In this case, it's Coach Eberflus's interview in its entirety, everything about it. I loved it. I'm a big fan of Flus. I hope you are. And, you know, how he's been handling this, it's been kind of cool because Ryan Poles has been front and center of everything. Like, hey, it's me. This is how I'm handling it. This is what it is. And Flus is just like, yeah, baby, thanks for not firing me. That's right. This is where we're at. But I do like it. I do like his approach. And, you know, he did understand and mentioned it in his interview that, you know, he knew that this job, the one that he took on, the one that Ryan Poles, it was trying to, you know, change that narrative. He knew it was going to be difficult.
You know, I spend time with those guys, each free agent when they come in, and the draft guys that come in. But the free agents, I spent about 45 minutes to an hour just really talking to them about the foundation that we laid the first 2 years, how we operate in the building, you know, how we're respectful and how we work hard, you know, in the parameters of how we work hard. You know, get to know them, you know, and their stories and their journey. You know, that's important for us to do that as we onboard all these new guys. You know, I think it might have been, 15 or 16 new guys that are coming in. And then obviously the four picks that we have, coming into the draft. So that's an exciting time for us. So I would say that when you look at when we took the job, and you know, Ryan and I took the job in 22, you know, so we knew the process was going to be difficult. You know, we didn't go into it blind, like, oh, this is going to be easy. You know, we knew exactly where the lay of the land was. You know, everybody through the interview process with, you know, Bill Polian and George and everybody that was in there laid out the process of what it was going to be, you know, in terms of we have to build this thing in stacks, you know. You know, so the first year was difficult. You know, the start of last year was. But then you could see that we laid good foundation and started to go on the rise. So we knew it's going to be a process of that. And now we're in our year three. And we're starting to add the talent because we got the cap right. Ryan and his crew have done an outstanding job. And we're in a good spot.
Of course, Coach Eberflus right there talking about a couple of things, right? first and foremost, he was mentioning that, you know, he got the opportunity to spend time with each free agent, which I think is important, right? Brian Poles is going to be the puppet master, but ultimately, you know, Eberflus is tasked with making these guys, you know, kind of weave into the culture of the Chicago Bears. He even talked about it at length, saying he can't wait till, you know, there's a team bonding when that happens, when the team is finally set for the upcoming season and he gets to have everybody together. He's really looking forward to that. And I think if you are a fan of Flus like I am, you understand that that in the present is his specialty. It is getting guys to buy in and getting them to play at the highest level, you know, despite turmoil that's going on around them. And in this case, I mean, it is going to be a lot of drama surrounding the team. And that's why he talked about, you know, he talked about that how difficult this was going to be, that, you know, there was going to be changes in players, there were going to be shifts in culture, and they're in the thick of it. Coach Eberflus, Ryan Poles, and I think up until this point, they're doing a good job.
Number two
inside the trifecta, and when it comes to the Coach Eberflus kind of interview, was talking about Caleb Williams a lot. And I thought, you know, you always try to, everybody's trying to figure out how a person feels or how enamored they are with an individual, right? Because it could be a scenario where not everyone is on the same page when it comes to it, despite what Ryan Poles says, that it's difficult for him to find someone that has something negative to say about Caleb Williams. But Coach Eberflus talked about his visit with Caleb Williams.
It was a really good visit out to USC in the pro day. You know, we went to dinner the night before with several of the players on the USC team that are draft eligible, and it was great to see him interact. You know, great personality, great character. You could see that easily during the dinner. And then the next day, we spent some time, doing the football knowledge and all those things. But I started out about an hour and 20 minutes, just him and I in the room together, and just really hearing his journey, you know, from being a little guy. And what I gleaned from that was it was his mother and father love him very much and very supportive. And, you know, you could see his character, his football character there, his football knowledge as I talked through that. And, it was a really good visit.
Coach Eberflus talking right there about his visit with Caleb Williams. That's a lengthy amount of time to be in a room with somebody. I don't know me. We got to talk for 2 hours. But what I loved about that entire statement was the glee in Coach Eberflus's voice when he then talked about when they had the opportunity to talk about football, right? Football. We got to talk about football. That was the part we got excited, and I'm sure he probably really liked what he heard there. Especially after, like you said, it was after the pro days and stuff. So he got a chance to talk about as well, you know, what the takeaways from Caleb's pro days were.
It was great. The biggest takeaway is that you can see the arm talent on the film, and you can see it there in person. And that was the biggest takeaway. What I loved to see was that the interaction with the other players. You can see that, and you know, we talked to every person that was on that team. You know, at the Senior Bowl, we interviewed them. We interviewed them at the pro day. We talked to those guys at the dinner, and you can certainly see that those players love him and respect him and what he's brought to that program.
And I like what he said. You know, a lot of takeaways. I think everybody's had the same thing. You heard George McCaskey talk about it as well. A lot of people, you know, feeling a certain type of way. And then I think we're all just ready now at this point. About a month away from the draft, a little less than a month away. And I think everyone's just ready. Just like Coach Eberflus says, get the people in the door. They're going to be here. Fill out the rest of the team. Let's go. I'm ready to fake make up how many wins I think the Bears are going to have at the end of the thing. I guess we'll see shortly.
Number one.
All right, number one. This one stood out to me because we heard him talk about Shane Waldron at the opening press conference when the two gentlemen had an opportunity to speak. Of course, the offensive defensive coordinator. But it was cool to hear him talk about Shane Waldron now because Justin Fields is gone. You can kind of talk about, you know, and you can talk about him freely without feeling as though you're tipping your hand in any way. And you heard Ryan Poles talk about it. He's a really good teacher. I played that for you yesterday. I'm talking about Shane Waldron, just a good teacher. But it was a good question that they asked him. Again, I still think we should credit people for the questions. But either way, Eberflus talked about why Shane Waldron stood out as an offensive coordinator to him.
It was a great process. I think, it's the number of guys that we interviewed, and they did an awesome job. But Shane, really stood out because of his ability to communicate and his ability to make things clear and concise, in his presentation and the way he did it. And he was clearly the guy that we thought was the best for us. I think the other thing that helped us decide on Shane was his experience. He was an experienced play caller, and he did with multiple quarterbacks. And to me, that was a separator for me.
Multiple quarterbacks, the ability to adjust. Coach Eberflus wants to be here for a long time, and he also wants his offensive coordinator to be able to adjust to whatever's happening on the fly. He did say that he's hands-on in the situation. We heard a lot of times last year, the last couple of years, maybe Getsy did his thing, and then, Flus kind of, interjected here and there. But he actually said he's been working with Waldron on some QB stuff.
It's just really about just going through the process of it and, working through with the coaches and setting everything up for him. So, when we're going to install things, offense and defense, they have to be tied together to make sure that we're understanding how we're moving the quarterback and the offense in the right direction. And I think that's always important to do. And that's not unique. That's something that I've always done. So that's a big part of it. And then really just the development side and the leadership side. That's going to be a big thing that Shane and I are working with the quarterback, because obviously he's the apex of the offense, and that's going to be a big developmental piece as well.
If I was the offensive coordinator and my coach said that I was the apex of the offense, I'd feel good about it. I'll tell you that. Everything that they've been saying about Shane Waldron, just glowing reviews, and I love it. I love hearing it. There was one thing that Coach Flew said I want to play as I wrap up the trifecta here. Gabe Ramirez, 670, The Score. About weapons and execution, because if there's one big argument that people have made for Justin Fields and what he was able to accomplish in his first couple of seasons was that he didn't necessarily have the weapons or the talent around him in order to really truly assess who he can be. And it was interesting to hear Flus talk about what having weapons will do to this offense.
Just the overall weapons, so if you have another weapon like that, you got DJ, and then Keenan, so 1A and a 1A type receiver, it's obviously very beneficial to any quarterback. And then you pair that with a couple really good two tight ends and a running back. I think that's the key piece to helping those guys execute a better way.
Is that what you do? Two tight ends? Two wide receivers and a running back? Thanks. I'm glad you let me know that's all you need for a productive offense. But obviously talking about high-quality ones. Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, I'm sure they're going to address the wide receiver room, with another piece, another component, whether that be via the draft or free agency, those that remain. Tyler Boyd still out there. I mean, just things that can't happen. But it's interesting. They clearly knew that. And so, again, just more. I'm just trying to light the Justin Fields fire just a little bit more before I go. All right. There is your trifecta, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a magic number.
Right here on 670 The Score, I am Gabe Ramirez, and I am broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And as promised, I wanted to play the audio for you. Ryan Poles, right? What did he have to say? I played a lot of Ryan Poles' audio yesterday, so I was trying to steer clear of it. But then, he went to go talk with Pat McAfee, and, first of all, shout out Ryan Poles, man. Looking healthy. Looking real healthy. Skin is glowing. I mean, you really are. It's like you're my GM. You're holding it down now, bro. You look healthy. You look like you're going to be here for a long time. So I'm really happy about that. Look good on the show. Had a little blazer with a little t-shirt on. Real young. Liked it. And he's able to, he has that Stacey King effect where he can give you a little bit of his personality, but he's always keeping it real, right? So you're going to get his personality, but he can give you, but he cleans it up when he needs to just because he wants to drive home a point. And I love that about Stacey King. I try to emulate that a lot. I love that about Ryan Poles. And that happens when you can get him in a comfort zone, right? And a GM is always answering tons of questions, constantly in business mode. But if you can loosen him up as if he's your guy and you guys are just quite literally talking sports, then he can have an answer like this, which I really enjoyed when Pat McAfee asked Ryan Poles thoughts on RG3's comments.
When RG3 comes out, you heard it. Yeah. Okay. What are your, like, don't you think like your particular Bears feels different than maybe the previous Bears. Like that's how we feel outside looking in. It's like, hey, this is a brand new building almost. Does it feel like that in there? And obviously you weren't there beforehand, but does it feel like you and Eberflus's culture is kind of, because at the end of the last season, it feels like, okay, the culture is kind of settling in, team settling in. You guys feel that obviously?
Yeah, that, it pisses me off a little bit to be honest with you, because we were hired to break a cycle. The same thing when I was in Kansas City, Coach Reed, all of us were brought there to break a cycle. And we did. And no one talks about those days anymore. It's all about what they are right now. So I really believe we're about to break this cycle and get this city in a really good situation and win a lot of games. So the past is the past. Like I don't worry about that at all. It's about where we're going.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Kind of pissed me off, too. That's not something you would just normally say in business speak, right? I mean, you probably maybe you do. But it's when you find someone that they're, you know, create that level of comfort with them, you get that out of them, and I think that's ultimately what everyone's trying to do right now with the Chicago Bears. Change the entire, like he you know, went out to talk about, you know, with the Kansas City Chiefs, that's what, you know, he and Andy Reid and all of them were tasked with doing. He talked about how people praise the organization for where they're at in the present, but no one talks about the years leading up to it that he was a part of, and then obviously they continued to grow or were in that space. And he's very confident that that's what's happening right now with the Chicago Bears, and I am too. I'm here. I'm telling you, man, I've been trying to tell anyone that would listen. I'm in on Ryan Poles. Even my brother Brandon, text message, he's like, did you hear Ryan Poles on with Pat McAfee? And I was like, but you just said he had the worst offseason, and you said it was an F. And he's like, but then he got Keenan Allen and an interior lineman, and then I was okay. It's like, yeah, but that's the thing. You can't just judge people off one or two moves. You can't say it's Chase Claypool, so you suck. You can't say you drafted Velus Jones, so you're terrible. Now if they pile up too much, then yes, you can. But when you're pitting it against everything that he's done, you got to say it's good. And that includes the ability, because he did say he took it hard, and foresight to move on from a quarterback that is good, but maybe not as good enough as you want him to be. Let's go to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. We got Sheik the Freak from the West Side. What up, Sheik?
What's up, Captain Boricua?
You know what it is. All right. Yeah, you were a big... No. I did overnights on this station for 17 weeks, and your ass will call up every night talking about Fields. Fields, no flus, literally the opposite of everything that's happening right now. What's the updated opinions of Sheik the Freak?
All right, so not that, let me preface this really quickly.
No, because
I'm a fan of Poles, Sheik,
here's the thing, you're my boy, you know this, Sheik, you do not have 5 minutes, you got to get right to the meat, let's go.
All right, so Poles' statement today, when he was answering McAfee, and he's like, they didn't bring me in here to not break the
mold.
System,
yeah.
What's going on. And at that point, I decided, you know what? That's it with Fields. And I love Fields, and I'm going to put $100 in Vegas in September for Bears-Steelers Super Bowl. Hopefully that hits, and we're going to win, of course. But Poles is the guy, man. I trust in Poles.
I do, too. Go ahead, what?
And even if Williams does not work out, the team is going to be so much better than what it was. We'll get the guy that's backing up Williams last year in USC or the kid from Georgia next year.
I love it. I love it. You're crazy. Sheik the Freak. Love it when he calls in, man. He is a diehard Bears fan. I know him personally. He's a diehard Bears fan. Him and I used to have many conversations about the Bears, some that I tried to get out of, but many conversations about the Bears even prior to me working here on 670 The Score. So I wanted to get that opportunity, but I mean, he is going to be like a large percentage of Bears fans. Those that didn't necessarily want to come to grips with Justin Fields moving on from Justin Fields, I should say, but then ultimately, you know, once you hear it, but here's what I want to say though. It's kind of like, I don't want to go there, but here's what I want to say is that ultimately we're going to support whatever happens when the Bears do it, right? Because they're our team, and that's just it. That's it. You got Caleb Williams? All right, whatever. I didn't necessarily agree with it, but we're here. I hope he throws for 4,000 yards and takes us to the playoffs. And then when he does, then you're happy about it. Like, that's just what happens. You might not like the number 9 pick that they bring in. They might go offensive tackle. And then I would be like, no, 2 years in a row, no. But then when the line short up and Caleb Williams isn't getting sacked, I'm like, well, guess I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. These guys are geniuses, right? And ultimately, that's what we want. The people that are making the decisions to have much more wisdom to be able to make the right decisions in situations like that. And that is what I am hoping for when it comes to that. But another thing the Sheik said that I talked about yesterday at length, and it was the fact that, you know, we all have jobs, all of us, and we all want to keep our jobs. I like my job. I like my paycheck. I don't want to do anything stupid to try to get rid of it, right? And I think Ryan Poles is the same way, where he understands if I take, he's the GM of the Bears. He's doing a hell of a job at it, and he does not want to get from off that stool right there. And the safest way to keep the job is to draft Caleb Williams. If you draft Caleb Williams and he fails, you can get away with that. Because everyone is saying that is the move. You can get away if he ends up just being a bust and being like, damn, we all thought it. Let me just go ahead and get Ryan Tannehill, right? If he sticks with Justin Fields and passes up Caleb Williams and Justin Fields sucks, he cannot survive that. If he trades out of that position and takes Drake May, which is crazy, he's not going to his pro day, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and those guys suck, he cannot get away with that. Fired in all of those instances. But you want to keep your job. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do agree. I did like the picks in Drake May, but I want to hold true that, like, I do think moving on from Justin Fields is the right thing to do. But I also understand that it's a business and that you want to make the best decision possible. And, you know, drafting Caleb Williams is that. I know that Grody had some good thoughts about what the Bears should be doing with number 9, and we'll get into that on the other side later in the hour. And also give you an update on what dilemma the Steelers are dealing with when it comes to Justin Fields and Russell Wilson in just about a month, a little bit after the draft. Is the deadline for the Steelers to pick up the fifth-year option on Justin Fields. We'll get into that conversation at the end of the hour. But I wanted to inundate with you with Bears stuff in the beginning because I'm selfishly talking about the Bulls on the other side. Bulls lost a heartbreaker yesterday. I know. No one wants to talk Bulls with me. And I call my dad. He doesn't want to talk Bulls. And that's him and I. That's what we do. And he'd rather talk about the Bears. Nobody. My friends. No one wants to. So what do I have to do? I have to make a guy that gets paid to talk about the Bulls come on the station that he already works at to talk more Bulls just so that I can selfishly talk Bulls. Of course, I'm talking about Cody Westerlin. He's going to talk about what happened last night with a depleted, injury-plagued Wizards team that was somehow able to defeat the Chicago Bulls. What went wrong? Cody will tell us on the other side. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
5.3 seconds left. Big free throw for Justin Champagne. Three bounces, spins that ball, puts it on the floor. The release, it is up. No good. Rebound, Caruso. The handoff to DeRozan. Over the midcourt line. It is up, and it is no good. From midcourt, the ball game is over, and Washington wins it 107-105. Oh, that was close.
Chuck Swirsky with the call right there. Bulls fall to the Washington Wizards, 107-105. It's Gabe Ramirez, 670 The Score. We are going to ask our next guest, why didn't DeMar DeRozan take a few more steps before he took the half-court shot? Joining us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. He takes care of us here at 670thescore.com. Also does a phenomenal job covering the Bulls. It is none other than Cody Westerlin. Cody, what up?
Gabe, what's going on? Straight from DeMar DeRozan's mouth post-game last night. it was going to be a really long shot no matter what, and he didn't want to get a step or two closer to a defender. So he chucked. The 45-footer was what it was clocked at in the NBA box score.
It was actually, I mean, I'm glad he said that because it is the right answer. If you watch that play again, the defender was, let's say, 6 feet away. And had he taken a step, the defender most certainly would have stopped and he would just would have probably been closer to him anyway. Almost went in, back of the rim.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't have been that close, right? Right, Cody? I think there was, it almost felt like the old Bulls, the Zach LaVine Bulls came out during this game where every person was trying to be responsible for stopping the run, especially in the beginning of the game. And then it just led to a lack of fluidity on the offense.
Yeah, I mean, 0 for 7 to start with a turnover. The Bulls had, I mean, a couple of their guards, Io and Kobe, dribbled into some weird places early on. Billy Donovan was really upset with him in the first half for not finding Nikola Vucevic on mismatches or just even in a traditional matchup. He had one shot in the first half, so he didn't like that at all. And that was pretty much most prevalent, like you said, in the first four and a half minutes of the game where they fell behind 15-0, and they really never figured it out on offense, in my opinion. I mean, they had a couple good quarters, but it felt way too hard for what it should be when they're playing the Wizards. I mean, that's not the worst defense in the NBA statistically. It's been bottom three basically all year. So that's just a case of the Bulls completely out of sorts. It shows they're trending in the wrong direction right now. And it shows, again, the worry is that sometimes you don't know what you're going to get from this team. And the thought process was really over the last few months, I think you'd probably agree, Gabe, you'd get a lot of fight out of them. They didn't always have enough firepower. Sometimes they didn't have enough size. Sometimes they didn't have enough players healthy. But they had be competitive, as AK talked about at the trade deadline. But we didn't see that against the Wizards because that was really ugly when you lose to a 13, I guess now 14-win team in Washington.
It was tough, man. Talking to Cody Westerlin here on 670 The Score. I mean, there's two things that are certain about the Bulls, right? One, that they're going to win the second quarter. I've been saying this to people. I said, the easiest bet, Bulls are going to get down. I'm talking about the margin. Bulls are going to get down in the first, and they're going to play hard with their second unit in the second, which they tried to do. But for whatever reason, I mean, you saw some guys come off the bench for Washington. It was almost as if, you know, they themselves had a prove it game. Like, hey, all right, guys, we know where we're at. We got this little streak going. I think we're better than this team that doesn't have all these star players out there. And sometimes you run into NBA teams that genuinely feel that way. They're looking at you as their own litmus test as they're looking in the mirror of who they are.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, the Wizards had to be embarrassed by, was it 16 or 17 game losing streak? I'm not sure what the exact number was for them recently. But like you said, I mean, that's three in a row for them. So they've certainly found something there. I don't always know that I can explain what it is, Gabe, because part of what they found in like last night was Jordan Poole was pretty good early on. I think he made like 7 of his first 11 or 12 shots. And then he got into this state of mind where he was basically just chucking wild shots, which we know he does sometimes. But that's a criticism of the Bulls, right? Because Jordan Poole's still a good shooter when he's open. And early in the game, he got some good looks, got a little rhythm, and they let the Wizards get a few layups. Corey Kispert played well, had a layup early, then knocked down some threes. So, like, these guys got in a rhythm because the Bulls didn't do their job. Like you said, pride's always going to come into it. Like, Billy Donovan kind of just, he hammered that point home post-game, Gabe. He's like, you can't let luck come into this. Those guys over there are playing for their jobs. They had four of their top players out. Kyle Kuzma, leading scorer, obviously, being the big-name guy for Washington that wasn't playing. Tyus Jones, their best option at point guard who organizes them and everything. Didn't have those guys, but Billy Donovan he seemed upset that his team underestimated the Wizards a little bit. He didn't say that. He pushed back at the line of thought saying, you know, the Bulls walk in and play down or up to their level of competition. He said his team hasn't thought like that in his opinion. But at the same time, it felt like that's what last night was, at least to the outside neutral observers like us.
Yeah, and you know what, Cody? I just tell people to that point that Donovan's making at the very end, right, about, you know, whether or not they're playing up or down to the competition. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is that I've been trying to preach that the Bulls, oddly, are one of the most exciting teams in the NBA, right?
They play so many close games.
But even I'm watching the Wizards game, and I'm trying to remove myself, right? Remove the fan that wants them to win like a championship. And I'm just thinking about the game. I'm thinking about a family that's at the United Center, you know, for the first time out in a month, and they're watching this game. They don't care. The mom and dad probably don't know, you know, how many games below 500 the Bulls are, but it's a hell of an exciting game. I wish you would have came out, but that's a hell of a game.
It was a sellout last night. I think Darnell Mayberry of The Athletic, I think, was the one who made the point. Like, he's like, it's incredible how many people are here and how excited Bulls fans are for these games that really, these don't matter, right? They're going to be the 9 seed. If they're not the 9 seed, almost certainly the 10 seed. Doesn't have a great deal of meaning. Bulls fans were still great. It was still packed. You know they love their basketball. And they got a close game because it's like this team is addicted to playing close games. Even when you look at their games lately, like, I guess they kind of got blown out in Houston against the Rockets, but they got in a skirmish in that one. It's like something always happens for these Bulls, and that's a little different from maybe early in the year when they were just getting blown out and you kind of had more off-the-court Zach LaVine drama, but now it's like the drama is on the court because they play close games or the Bulls are mad at someone lately. And I should point out, too, Gabe, let me know what you think here, but the Bulls lost by 2 to the Wizards, and Javon Carter got a technical foul for one of the most egregious flops I'd seen in a long time. He got pushed from outside the free throw line and ran into the second row of the baseline seats. Some of that was his momentum, and then some of it was selling it, and then some of it I think he just checked out on the play. And then Alex Caruso had the flagrant one for pushing Jordan Poole really hard from behind. That's 3 points like right there in a game you lose by 2. This team's losing its composure a little bit too. I mean, that's 2 out of the last 3 games where they didn't help themselves with their mindset and their attitude at all. They had one earlier in the year against the Bucks that was just absolutely egregious. How they, I think Vooch delivered a flagrant foul and everyone on the team got mad and had technicals, and then all of a sudden a 6-point game was a 25-point game. So they got to find themselves. They really do. And again, that's maybe a little contradictory by me because I'm like, these games don't really matter. But if you want to have a chance in the play-in game, like, you can't be giving away 3 points in a close game, because guess what? They'll probably be in a close game.
He's Cody Westerlin. I'm Gabe Ramirez. This is 670 Score. That's a great point. I mean, when you're talking about that, because Cody, in those moments, the assumption is that DeMar DeRozan should be the supreme, you know, veteran and kind of calm things down. But he's more often than not is the guy that's complaining about those situations. And then it's Ayo who finds himself trying to be the guy grabbing people like Vooch and like DeMar.
Ayo's got the best attitude on the team.
Yeah.
He never, hardly ever complains from what I see.
Especially lately driving to the rim, getting the amount of contact he's gotten near and above that space. It's frightening at sometimes, but he doesn't complain. He gets up, runs down the court. You know, that's what I do like about Iowa and the team that's there. You mentioned Javon Carter a second ago, and I wanted to at least – I've been giving him crap all season long. I wanted to at least highlight his decent game. Like, all season long, Cody, I just want Javon Carter to give me that. Two threes, a mid-range bunny, and, you know, maybe a layup. I don't need you to do anything more than that. But it seems as though that hasn't been the case. But it seemed like he had a little fire – I don't know. He got into it with somebody, and then he got mad. So if they need to get him mad before these games, maybe that's what they need to do to get Javon going.
Yeah, I mean, 8 points in 16 minutes. Like, that's very helpful for him, right? Like, they need to juice up that second unit more, because usually it's only going to be one of DeMar or Kobe on the court with a lot of those second unit guys. And you look, and like, Andre Drummond's going to produce on the second unit, but it's not going to be in a playmaking role. It's going to be in a cleanup role or off a lob or something like that. So they need that from Javon Carter. Like you said, he's been really inconsistent this year. A lot of it has to do with his play, and his three-point shooting hasn't obviously been what he's wanted. I think he's hovered around 33-34% from deep, and was a little worse than that, I think, earlier in the year. Billy Donovan doesn't like playing him some matchups too. Like, Javon Carter's a small guard, so if the other team has a big backcourt, like, there's nights you'll see Billy has just gone, like, more Dalen Terry, more Julian Phillips before Julian Phillips got hurt, obviously, stuff like that. So it hasn't been easy for Javon Carter being in and out, but he's got to shoot the ball well and give him something if he wants to have a lot of playing time. And, you know, other than the flopping last night, he did have a good game other than that one moment, because he knocked down 3 shots, and that's what they want him to do.
Yeah, that's what we've all wanted him to do. And as you mentioned, you know, the insertion of Dalen Terry, it's odd. I think it was last game where I was watching it, and I was like, there's something different about you. I don't know if he had bulked up just a little bit, maybe a pound's stuck finally, or, you know, he wasn't as jittery as he normally is in the game. Something looked different, so I'm excited to continue to see him get minutes as this thing winds down, because there are some important games coming up. You see the next stretch, Indiana, Brooklyn, and then, of course, you got to go up against Anthony Edwards to finish out the month. What can we be expecting from these Bulls as these games approach?
Well, I would probably expect a lot more close games. They always do that, Gabe. I expect them to hold off the Hawks for the ninth seed. So I think, as everyone in Chicago is pretty much projected for months, I would expect them to host the play-in game, the same one they played in last year, the 9-10 game. Last year was in Toronto. This time the Bulls would be the host. But same idea. You got to win two games to get into the traditional 8-team bracket, just to remind everyone. But I would expect down the stretch, if the Bulls seeding, if their seed line is locked in, you could see them rest Kobe White, DeMar DeRozan a game or two, maybe play him fewer minutes. But they are not inclined to do that until they really know what their seed is, and they'd rather have the home game, obviously, than the road game in the play-in. So right now they're 1.5 games ahead of the Hawks. The Bulls and Hawks do play on Monday night at the United Center. Bulls already have won both meetings, so they have that tiebreaker locked up. But if the Hawks beat them at the United Center, then you know that's up in the air and they're neck and neck, really, for that spot. So if the Bulls could beat the Hawks in that game next Monday, it would feel probably like they would pretty much lock up that 9 seed with the tiebreaker and put in a little more space between them. So I would expect a lot of the same. And at the tail end, maybe if everything's locked in, you see the veterans rest a little bit. But for right now, it's about finding a little bit more offensive efficiency, I think, at this point after watching the last game.
I love it, Cody. It's great talking to you about Bulls as always, man. Have a great night. And when you see Batim, tell him to pass the ball, bro. Tell him it's okay if he passes the ball.
I will tell him Gabe said that, yeah. And then I'll let you know what he said.
All right, Cody Westerlin, our guy here at 670, the score covers the Bulls. It's a fantastic job on the website. Just an all-around great guy, giving us some great insight into a team that pains us sometimes based off of what they do. All right, coming up, as promised, we're going to go back to a team that's given us the good feelings lately, and that is the Chicago Bears. But we'll talk a little bit about their former quarterback and what the decision Mike Tomlin is going to have to make with his fifth-year option. We'll do that next right here on 670 The Score.
And anytime you get down here, you have to be alert for Justin Fields' legs. They can be lethal in the red zone.
Trent Taylor in motion. There is Fields in his legs. Dances outside. Stretches. Touchdown, Justin Fields.
It's Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score and on 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Justin Fields, he got 99 problems, but Russell Wilson ain't one. He might not be. Leave that playing for them. I like that. I don't mind that. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out, man. Happy Tuesday, everybody. In this segment right here, we get to talk about the Steelers and the decision they are going to have to make come May about Justin Fields. And it's interesting because, of course, everybody's like, oh, man, you got Justin Fields for a 6th-round pick. You got Russell Wilson for, you know, a mill and some change. And everybody's like, oh, the quarterback room is great. Yeah, for that moment. And now what happens? Well, Justin Fields, well, first of all, Charles Robinson wrote a great piece on this. And, you know, he talked about how the Steelers have to make a decision on the fifth-year option by May 2nd. So, you know, obviously that's what the Bears are trying to decide too, right? Like, what was going to happen in that situation? So here are the options that the Steelers now have with Justin Fields for May 2nd. They can pick up the option, his fifth-year option, which would then pay him $25.66 million. $26 million, right? If they try to tag him next year, right? Because they don't do the option and they want to keep him, they want to tag him, that'll be $42 million. Not sure if they want to pay that. The other option is the Jordan Love option, which you are then guaranteed less money than you would make with your fifth-year option, but there are incentives for you to then capitalize on that number. Here is the issue that Charles Robinson speaks of in the article, and it is that if you're Russell Wilson and they pick up the option for 2025, you then think to yourself, well, damn, you're probably thinking, buddy, starting next year. And I'm here on this 1-year deal for $1 million. I'm not as invested in this team as I should be. The other thing is if they, you know, go and tag them. Just all these things are saying that it might cause a little bit of controversy, which I think will be interesting. And I did hear some people say, like, it'll be wild if Russell Wilson gets cut. Just so that they can, you know, give the keys to Justin Fields. Not that that would happen. But an interesting conundrum for the Pittsburgh Steelers to be in where they have to make that decision. Now, I am going to assume that they will decline the fifth-year option. I'm not... I mean, I get it. Because you're essentially saying for a two-year deal, I'm paying $13 million a year for Justin Fields with a very back-end loaded deal. That's how you could, you know, justify it, which actually makes sense. But I think what they'll do is one of the other options that I mentioned, which is decline the option, negotiate, be like, don't even trip, bro. We're going to give you this much money, more than you made this year, less than you would have made. And then check it out. If Russell Wilson goes down or you end up playing, you know, 50% of the games, we'll slap another $5 million off for you. Something like that. Like, to me, that would make the most sense. But, man, I do like the fact that that's what we're going to play after the break. Ryan Poles just continuing to talk about Justin Fields on the Pat McAfee Show. Play a little clip of that. And we do want to take a call, too. It's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. Bears season couldn't be here fast enough. The Cubs and the Sox are right around the corner. But I'm just curious about your Bears thoughts right now. So much going on. I feel like I need a longer show today to talk more Bears. We do have Matt Verderam coming up in middle of the 8 o'clock hour. Talk some Bears and some drafts. But I want to hear from you. You're up right now. 312-644-6767. Bears thoughts on what's going on, just updated ones. Those are the ones that I like, and then I'm going to play you some Ryan Poles cuts on the other side, and we'll continue to chat right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And anytime you get down here, you have to be alert for Justin Fields' legs. They can be lethal in the red zone.
Trent Taylor in motion. There is Fields in his legs. Dances outside. Stretches. Touchdown, Justin Fields.
It's Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score and on 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Justin Fields, he got 99 problems, but Russell Wilson ain't one. He might not be. Leave that playing for them. I like that. I don't mind that. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out, man. Happy Tuesday, everybody. In this segment right here, we get to talk about the Steelers and the decision they are going to have to make come May about Justin Fields. And it's interesting because, of course, everybody's like, oh, man, you got Justin Fields for a sixth-round pick. You got Russell Wilson for, you know, a million some change. And everybody's like, oh, the quarterback room is great. Yeah, for that moment. And now what happens? Well, Justin Fields, well, first of all, Charles Robinson wrote a great piece on this. And, you know, he talked about how the Steelers have to make a decision on the fifth-year option by May 2nd. So, you know, obviously that's what the Bears are trying to decide too, right? Like, what was going to happen in that situation? So here are the options that the Steelers now have with Justin Fields for May 2nd. They can pick up the option, his fifth-year option, which would then pay him $25.66 million. $26 million, right? If they try to tag him next year, right? Because they don't do the option and they want to keep him. They want to tag him. That'll be $42 million. Not sure if they want to pay that. The other option is the Jordan Love option, which you are then guaranteed less money than you would make with your fifth-year option, but there are incentives for you to then capitalize on that number. Here is the issue that Charles Robinson speaks of in the article, and it is that if you're Russell Wilson and they A, pick up the option for 2025, you then think to yourself, well, damn, you're probably thinking Buddy's starting next year. And I'm here on this 1 year deal for $1 million. I'm not as invested in this team as I should be. The other thing is if they, you know, go and tag them, just all these things are saying that it might cause a little bit of controversy, which I think will be interesting. And I did hear some people say like it'll be wild if Russell Wilson gets cut. Just so that they can, you know, give the keys to Justin Fields. Not that that would happen, but an interesting conundrum for the Pittsburgh Steelers to be in where they have to make that decision. Now, I am going to assume that they will decline the fifth-year option. I'm not... I get it, because you're essentially saying for a two-year deal, I'm paying $13 million a year for Justin Fields with a very back-end loaded deal. That's how you could, you know, justify it, which actually makes sense. But I think what they'll do is one of the other options that I mentioned, which is decline the option, negotiate, be like, don't even trip, bro. We're going to give you this much money, more than you made this year, less than you would have made. And then check it out. If Russell Wilson goes down or you end up playing, you know, 50% of the games, we'll slap another $5 million off for you, something like that. Like, to me, that would make the most sense. But, man, I do like the fact that that's what we're going to play after the break. Ryan Poles just continuing to talk about Justin Fields on the Pat McAfee Show. Play a little clip of that. And we do want to take a call, too. It's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. Bear season couldn't be here fast enough. Cubs and the Sox are right around the corner. But I'm just curious about your Bears thoughts right now. So much going on. I feel like I need a longer show today to talk more Bears. We do have Matt Verderam coming up in middle of the 8 o'clock hour. Talk some Bears and some drafts. But I want to hear from you. You're up right now. 312-644-6767. Bears thoughts on what's going on, just updated ones. Those are the ones that I like, and then I'm going to play you some Ryan Poles cuts on the other side, and we'll continue to chat right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.